Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're going to be joined early today by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We're recording over the noon hour in the Eastern time zone, in the 11 o'clock hour in the Central time zone, simply because I'm fairly busy this afternoon. Wayne, thanks for doing the program early with me. It's kind of a turnaround Tuesday, and I'm not sure that most people expected this after the jump in the markets yesterday.
No, it was somewhat unexpected here. We did see some very good planting progress in the corn, which maybe had us a little bit weaker in the corn coming into things. But, you know, we were green coming into the morning here, unchanged basically on the corn early and higher in the beans. And as the days went on here, we've slipped back in the beans, and the corn is back down about a nickel here right now as we're trading. Does seem to be finding some support in here.
Is there any primary fundamental reason that this is happening for the day?
Well, I think that basically some of the funds did cover a lot of their shorts yesterday, and I think they're looking at the window of openings for the Northwest next week, and after we get this one rain through here this weekend, that maybe we'll see some planting progress, and the great planting progress that we saw last week and when we do get dry areas. But and all in all, why I think that the ethanol plants cut back their basis or widened their basis out a little bit on the big move up yesterday, saying that there was some corn moving. So, you know, lots of old stocks left, so that's what's, you know, hampering this market.
Lots of old stocks and lots of new crop coming on out of South America for both corn and soybeans. And planting progress looked really good. Do you expect Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota to move in the next few days? They didn't get the kind of rainfall that the rest of the bottom third of the Corn Belt did.
You know, they're going to get in the field faster than we will, and they'll make some progress next week. You know, we look for minimal progress on the Monday's report to come out because we won't see that much in between. But then the next week after that, we think that Iowa and the West will make some pretty good progress. But, you know, we've got some areas in Kansas and Nebraska and out there where there's still snow on the ground, and they're having some real problems with their cattle. We're seeing June cattle up the limit today, Todd.
Hey, Wayne, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether sending your child to college next year or in 18 years, invest in their future with Busey. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Well, as I said earlier, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from Washington, D.C. today, where I'm traveling with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting on their annual Washington Watch event. This morning, we met with U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. We'll have more from that interview with him later in the week, and you'll find quite a bit of it, I would suspect, over the next 24 hours or so on my @CommodityWeek Twitter feed. We'll also try to post some of that up into the website at willag.org, willag.org. Not only did we talk with the new Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, but we also caught up with Seth Myers of the World Agricultural Board and the Chief Economist for USDA, Mr. Joe Hansen. So check out those things at willag.org and at my Twitter account, @CommodityWeek. Now, here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Partly cloudy skies, a low of 39 tonight on a north-northwest wind at 10 to 20. Tomorrow it'll be cloudy. We'll have periods of rain late in the day, maybe a 70% chance, and we might get nearly a tenth of an inch, a high of 54. Tomorrow night, rain is likely another nearly inch and three quarters with a low of 45 degrees. And then on Thursday, another inch of rainfall is predicted. Right now they're saying that there'll be 100% of the area covered. Thursday evening, another 3 to 4 tenths. It'll be windy on Thursday night, and we'll drop to a low of 42 degrees. We'll have more weather weather at the bottom of the half hour when we talk with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in Washington, D.C. this week. A full day of meetings with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting this morning. We should have met with USDA Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, along with a series of other folks. We'll report on that later. This afternoon, however, during the closing market report, we'll bring you some interviews that we did yesterday in D.C. We start with a farmer who's a sorghum producer in the southwestern corner of Nebraska. I talked to him quite a little bit about sorghum and asked him some about his crop rotations. I think you'll enjoy this interview with Don Bloss.
So, Donald, most of the time when I talk to our listeners, it would be about the corn and the soybeans that are grown in your area. We've watched that for several years. However, you're a sorghum producer as well. We know that you in that area probably incorporated soybeans into the rotation fairly recently. Corn's there, been there for a while. Soybean acre or sorghum acreage is down this year, but there are some real bright spots for sorghum. Chinese exports have been just unbelievable for the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. The 480 million bushel that we harvested 2 years ago, 370 million bushel that went to China as exports. And we've been building other exports also. We have 11 other countries that are buying sorghum from us. So it's being a real good business right now for trade.
So the Chinese at some point, and you'll have to correct me or help me out because I haven't followed it completely, did look at the sorghum trade, said, hey, wait a second, we're not going to take so much. They began to back it off. But have they come back into your marketplace again?
Absolutely. Yeah, they've taken more this year now than what they have before. There was a pause there for a while, probably because of the price. There wasn't as many acres of sorghum planted, and the demand is very good. So at that point in time, while the price got awfully high and the Chinese backed out, but as soon as the price got back down a little bit again, well, they're right back in the business, and still wanting to import more.
What's your rotation look like with sorghum in it?
Well, generally say a corn-soybean rotation, only about a third of the corn acres I use as sorghum, and I also plant some wheat. I like the rotations because in the area where I'm at, I have some ground that's a little bit more marginal than what the other is, and I just can't see putting $80 an acre worth of seed into the ground like with corn. Sorghum's a lot, costs less to plant, less to insure. And you're almost every year certain of raising a crop of sorghum. In fact, through the 80s, I quit raising corn because we didn't have crop insurance. And we raised a lot of hogs, and we needed to have a crop every year. So we went to all sorghum at that point in time. And right now, it's a big benefit for the rotation factor. We've got a lot of people in our area and in other areas of corn and soybean rotation where we're getting into a lot of Roundup-resistant weeds. If you break that cycle with sorghum for a year or two and wheat, I have to give wheat a compliment on that also, we just don't have nearly the problem of the resistant weeds. We don't have nearly as much money spent on chemicals trying to take care of the Roundup-resistant weeds.
I want to pick up that, this is related to sorghum, but tangentially, because I want to follow up on the Roundup-resistant weeds. I take it that was part and parcel to begin with of the Roundup-ready soybeans that allowed you to put soybeans into your rotation, because those haven't been there for that many years, I'm going to make an assumption.
Right, yeah. Through the 80s, we didn't raise very much for soybeans at all. In fact, I'm not even sure we had soybeans in our rotation because we had a lot of wheat. And, of course, we raised a lot of hay at that point in time where we had livestock. And corn / milo in the rotations. We had mostly milo and wheat in our rotations. And as soon as Roundup came in, soybeans were a lot easier to plant. It was a good crop. They've made a lot of improvements along the line in soybeans, where they're a very productive, more profitable crop. Again, a little bit less investment. So, yeah, soybean came in big time, and where it's legume, well, we try to use that as about 50% of our rotation in order to help build our soils up.
I'm going to delve into some other areas here just because you're from a part of the world that I don't get to talk to a lot of farmers from very often. We hear on the radio from the experts, from some of our brokers, from the bankers, that the Nebraska, parts of Iowa, parts of Kansas are suffering far more than the rest of the country, at least first. I don't know about far more. Do you feel that from your farmers and neighbors, that they're under really kind of a crunch this year as it relates to going to the banker and having operating loans put in place and those kinds of functions?
It certainly is. Right in our area, it seems like, and I'm sure it has scattered all the way across Nebraska too, we got into such extremely high cash rents on land, and the land prices have gotten so high. And part of that was self-induced. We did that. There just wasn't as much land turned, and there usually isn't as much ground turned in Iowa and Illinois as what there is in Nebraska. And we got a little bit carried away with the amount of money that we were willing to spend at that time. And at that time, it worked out, but you just couldn't pencil that in for the long haul. You know, for 5 or 10 years, the prices are going to change, and unfortunately, it went the other direction than what we wanted it to.
What would an average piece of land sell for at this time?
That I wouldn't be able to answer. I don't believe it's changed an awful lot. They say in irrigated Nebraska, some of the land is going for about half of what it did 2 or 3 years ago. In our area, they aren't forced to sell. Some of the land that's being sold is probably about 10%, 20% less. Not a lot, but and some of it's pasture ground. Cattle are a good price. That helps us out also. We're in irrigated country where you really don't have cattle or hogs, not much for livestock, but that's been helping us out down there for the time being at least.
Don, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good year.
That was Don Blas. He's a sorghum producer from the southwestern corner of Nebraska. We caught up with him yesterday at Washington Watch. We're here in Washington, D.C. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Also yesterday, the United States Department of Agriculture released the latest crop progress report. It shows that as of Sunday, across the 18 reporting states, 34% of the crop had been put into the ground. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 34% and 43% of the crop being planted last year. 9% of that crop has emerged, 8% is the rolling five-year average. 10% of the soybeans across the United States have been sown. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 7%. Checking the wheat crop and its condition across the U.S., 42% of that crop is headed. The rolling five-year average is 34%, and it's in decent condition, or at least was as of Sunday. However, that is likely to change quite dramatically by the time we get to the next crop progress report, with all of the damage that may have been done with the snowfall and rain in the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the Plain States, especially in western Kansas. 45% of the crop said to be in good condition as of Sunday, 9% in excellent. That compares to 45 and 9 in the previous week, and 50% and 11% last year. Now here are the state statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, and Nebraska with updates from their regions.
This is Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Region. Rain, snow, and below normal temperatures prevented planting across most of Iowa late in the week ending April 30th, 2017. Statewide, there were only 3 days rated suitable for fieldwork. Temperatures dropped into the 20s in parts of Iowa, and many producers are waiting for warmer weather before planting corn and soybeans. For corn already planted, some concerns about crop emergence were reported. East central and south central Iowa have the highest subsoil moisture levels, with 40% or more rated surplus. Statewide, 28% of the corn acreage has been planted. This is over a week behind last year, but only 2 days behind the five-year average. Southeast Iowa farmers have planted over half their corn acreage, while farmers in the northern third of Iowa have planted less than one-fifth of their corn acreage. 2% of the soybean acreage has been planted, 2 days behind average. 82% of the state's oat crop has been planted, moving 1 day ahead of the average for the first time this year. Pastures are green, but growth slowed with recent cool temperatures. There were no reported livestock issues for cows and calves in pastures, but mud issues were reported with outside feedlots. I'm Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Region.
This is Mark Schleusener, State Statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Last week was cool and very wet across Illinois. Rainfall amounts ranged from 2.25 inches to more than 7.5 inches. Departures from normal rainfall amounts ranged from 1.5 to 6.5 inches above normal. Ponding in fields is very common, and some creeks and rivers have flooded agricultural fields as well. Temperatures were generally below normal in northern parts of the state and above normal in southern Illinois. There were 3.3 days suitable for field work last week. Soil temperatures ranged from the upper 40s to the mid-60s. Crop producers were able to complete fieldwork activities, including planting and spraying, during the first half of last week. Corn planting advanced by 29 points to reach 63% finished, the same as 1 year ago and well ahead of the 5-year average pace of 47%. 20% of corn acres have emerged compared to 15% normally. Soybean planting reached 13% complete, ahead of last year's 8% and the 5-year average of 6%. The winter wheat crop is now 67% headed, compared to 25% last year and 23% normally. The condition of the winter wheat crop was reported as 5% poor, 23% fair, and 72% good to excellent. In other crops, oats planting reached 94% complete. 3% of sorghum acres are planted. 10% of the first cutting of alfalfa hay is finished, and 9% of other hay acres have been cut. Pasture conditions are now rated 2% poor, 16% fair, and 82% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loft, a state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with a weekly crop progress and condition report. Continuing cool temperatures and wet field conditions further delayed planting efforts in Minnesota. There were only 1.7 days suitable for field work during the week. Corn planting was 12% complete, that's 13 days behind last year and 9 days behind average. 21% of Minnesota's spring wheat was planted, that's 2 weeks behind last year, and 28 percentage points behind the 5-year average. 5% of the spring wheat has emerged, that's 17 percentage points behind average. The oat planting progress was also 2 weeks behind last year, advancing to 38% complete. 15% of the oats were emerged, well behind last year's 49%, and 14 percentage points behind the average. Barley planting progress was 10% planted, with only 2% of the acreage emerged. Pasture conditions were upgraded to 0% very poor, 7% poor, 37% fair, 52% good, and 4% excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Jessica Lemonager with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report. Farmers made significant progress with corn and soybean plantings before heavy rainfall halted field work. The lowest recorded temperature for the week was 33 degrees, the highest 86 degrees. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.62 to 8.31 inches. Corn was 45% planted this week, compared to 27% last year and 26% 5-year average. Corn was 10% emerged, compared to 3% last year and 7% 5-year average. Soybeans were 16% planted this week, compared to 5% last year and 8% 5-year average. Winter wheat jointing was 70% complete this week, compared to 79% last year and 63% 5-year average. Winter wheat was 32% headed, compared to 12% last year and 11% 5-year average. Spring plantings for both corn and soybeans are ahead of schedule despite the rains. Some farmers are concerned that the increased rainfall coupled with cooler temperatures will slow germination and emergent for the recently planted crops. Many low-lying areas have ponded and may need to be replanted. The state's winter wheat crop appears to have withstood the weekend storms very well, with 71% of the crop in good to excellent condition. There were some reports of lodging in the wheat fields, but it does not appear to be widespread. The wet and cool weather over the weekend has also slowed pasture and hay growth for much of the state. Mint plantings were wrapping up. Livestock were reported to be in good condition, with calving progressing nicely. Other activities for the week included tilling, applying fertilizer, repairing planting equipment, hauling grain, visiting FSA, and mowing roadsides. This is Jessica Lemonager reporting.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're in Washington, D.C. this week. Let's return to some of the interviews we've been conducting, courtesy of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I spoke yesterday with Ben Gruitt. He's with the National Refiners Association, and has a new term that he and the association have been tossing about. It's called bioeconomy. I asked Gruitt just exactly what a bioeconomy might be.
It's a pretty broad term. It can be used to talk about the work being done in agriculture to improve yields and seeds. It can be used to talk about healthcare. When we talk about bioeconomy, we're really talking about the material space. So, I mean, if you look at the carpet beneath your feet, if you look at those pens and that there, and you even look at your lanyard, a lot of these are made out of petrochemicals. The bioeconomy in terms of the Corn Refiners Association are using renewable corn or soy, fermenting them and using them to create anything from detergents to plastics to a number of ingredients that we interact with on a daily basis.
So let's talk a little bit about where these products come from and what the new products might be on the table that would be coming forward. I can think of a couple of things. Are there anything that might be a bolt-on for an ethanol production plant that would help in the process?
Sure. So on the dry mill side of things, ethanol doesn't always have to be a fuel for use in internal combustion engines. It can actually act as an intermediate to a lot of different products. And so I've had conversations with people in that industry that are looking at that as a way to diversify beyond just fuel. It can be turned into ethyl acetate, which has a lot of industrial uses. As well, it can be fed in for a number of intermediate product designations.
Have we done enough research to know what we need to do to make those products come out of those plants? Do we need to do something on the front end with the grind? Is there something in the middle of the process or on the back end of the process?
So I'd say it's mostly on the middle and the end right now. So a lot of this is being done. There's a ton of startups out there. I just came from a conference in Iowa last month where there was, you know, it was all about the startups that are, you know, turning corn into plastics, looking to pull nutrients out of wastewater to use on farm fertilizer. It's really a very broad space and it's happening fairly rapidly. So really for us, it's about establishing policies, removing obstacles to the bioeconomy to really allow this space to flourish, because the cost of technology has come down, agricultural production has increased over the decades, and so we're really at kind of a crossroads of, you know, where this industry can explode on the scene.
Colors and dyes is one of the areas I think that might be in this space. Are we doing much research there?
Our members are doing some work in colors and dyes as well as fragrances and flavors as well. So, yeah, there's food-based applications, materials. There's any number of things that can be created from corn and other ag products.
Ben, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ben Gruitt is with the Corn Refiners Association.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Look us up online at WILLAG.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Truffles Day. Truffles were known by the ancient Samaritans, Greeks, and Romans, who served black and white truffles as appetizers and in salads. The earliest known surviving documents mentioning truffles in cooking are in two 9th century manuscripts. By the way, a 3-pound truffle sold in 2007 for $330,000. It was unearthed near Pisa, Italy. On this day in agricultural history in 1883, S.G. Roberts, a member of the Dakota Territorial Council, convinced his fellow representatives to draft and pass a bill that would allow the northern portion of Dakota Territory to create an agricultural college. Today, it is known as North Dakota State University. In 1885, Good Housekeeping magazine began publication. Founded by Clark W. Bryan, the magazine was eventually purchased by Hearst Publishing in 1911. The magazine was a leader in advocating for the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act, which provided federal inspection of meat products and established labeling requirements on a number of drugs. The Meat Inspection Act authorized the Secretary of Agriculture to inspect and condemn any meat product found unfit for human consumption. By the way, the act was partly in response to Uptown Sinclair's The Jungle, a look at the Chicago meatpacking industry. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Through both the prosperous and challenging economic cycles of agriculture, Farm Credit will support rural Illinois today and tomorrow.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, thanks for being with us. Can you review for me what happened over the weekend and then your expectations about when producers might be able to move based on the forecast for different parts of the Corn Belt and maybe a quick assessment of things in the hard red winter wheat growing regions too?
Okay, first of all, for this past weekend, it was wild and woolly. We had a major late spring storm over portions of Colorado, Nebraska, and Kansas, and the panhandles of Oklahoma and Texas, where some very heavy snow fell in many areas with 50-mile-per-hour winds. Beneficial moisture, but certainly hardened livestock interest there. Then we had all that severe weather across portions of the southern plains, Texas, Oklahoma, into Arkansas, with many reports of severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. And it's going to stay a very busy weather pattern. That same very system that was a big weekend producer of bad weather is helping to initiate a redevelopment of low pressure over the nation's midsection. And right now, at least here through the next 3.5 days, it's going to be hard for folks in the central and southern and eastern Corn Belt to get out there. We are going to see significant rains across portions of eastern Kansas, Missouri, central and southern Illinois, and many areas of Indiana and Ohio look to be quite wet. The northern and western Corn Belt areas, well, they've got a chance to get out there, whether it's eastern Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, or Minnesota.
And so they'll be able to get out there in those northern Corn Belt areas. Will they have another rainfall that comes through very soon or not?
Well, they are going to have a break. Those northern areas and the western areas are going to see some warm, drier conditions developing this weekend and into the beginning of the next week. Mid to late next week, rainfall picks up again. But the warmer, drier air mass that's going to build in the western plains and Rockies late this week and this weekend will give a little bit of an opportunity for the Midwestern Corn Belt late in the weekend and early next week to maybe get out in the fields before we start to see the thunderstorm cycle begin again. It really looks like a typical, really a textbook May pattern developing. Some large, slow-moving, very wet storm systems with a 3 or 4 day gap between them, and this is something that we're going to have through the first 2 weeks of the month.
Can you check on the southeast for me again really quickly as well? They had been suffering really dry conditions. What are they like today?
Short term, they've got some real good chances of rain. The system that will be coming through will produce pretty much widespread rainfall over the southeastern states of Georgia, Alabama, the Carolinas, many areas of Florida. They've got some good opportunities in the short term to get wet. Long term, we're still concerned about dryness, but at least here over the next week to 10 days, they do have some beneficial rains coming.
As late as last week, we heard about the second crop in Brazil of corn and that its conditions for weather were perfect. Do they remain that way today?
It is certainly looking that way. As they go to the tail end of their season there, they've got some warm conditions, got some growing degree days that are going to be accumulated. And right now, the rainfall is going to be spotty, not too heavy. So that very favorable condition for those areas will persist a bit longer.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling this week in Washington, D.C. with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting at their Washington Watch event.